For Thomas Matters Radio, this is Mark Collier. Sponsor today, Omega Processing Solutions. Very happy to announce that Omega Processing Solutions is back, full in effect, for the entire year of 2016. Going to be bringing For Thomas Matters Radio to you every week. That's such a big deal, and we are so happy and proud to partner with them. Omega Processing Solutions can help your business achieve its profits and productivity goals in 2016. They've developed an innovative merchant processing program that can help your business boost the bottom line, streamline operations, and get paid faster. The program features secure, simple virtual processing, invoicing and online bill payments, mobile payment apps, e-commerce solutions, unlimited system users, and accounting and integration. And as always, you get 24/7 customer service, no contract, no early termination fee. Guys, call them 866-888-9724. You got an extension 7 on that, or visit omegap.com. Again, 866-888-9724, extension 7, or omegap.com. So today on the show, we've got Matt Tieford. Matt just announced his candidacy for the Kentucky House of Representatives in District 67, which is comprised of cities like Dayton, Bellevue, Newport, Wilder, Southgate, Woodlawn, and some of Highland Heights. He's from Highland Heights. And this is a really interesting race because Dennis Keene, who is the incumbent in that district, obviously Dennis is a Democrat, and the trend has been trending across the state and really in Northern Kentucky has been a leader on this kind of momentum for the Republicans. So this will be a really interesting race because Dennis is in District 67 is pretty as safe as you could be as a House Democrat. You have a lot of House Democrats right now statewide flipping to Republicans because they kind of see that trend, and it's a scary time to be a Democrat in Kentucky. So Dennis and Matt Tieford will go head to head. As of now, there's not been any other primary filings. The deadline will be Tuesday, January 26th for that. So we're going to talk to Matt about, you know, what he thinks his chances are, what his reason for running would be. There's a couple of themes that if you read some of what he's writing, seem to come up quite often. Number one is transparency, and number two is corruption. So we're going to ask Matt what he means by that and whether or not those themes are implicit in, you know, his candidate, what he feels his candidate is representing, or if that's just a kind of a judgment on the entire system. So we will have Matt coming up right now. But again, thank you so much to Omega Processing Solutions. Again, back for 52 episodes of For Thomas Matters Radio this year. Cannot thank them enough. We've been on the cutting edge of this trend, and we certainly appreciate their loyalty. And if you are a small business owner, please give them a call. So in the Borderlands podcast studio, we are with Matt Tieford today. Matt is running for the 67th district, which encompasses, again, Wilder, Dayton, Newport, Bellevue, Southgate, Woodlawn, in a small part of Highland Heights. Matt, how are you?
Feeling great. How about you?
Great. Thanks for joining us today. You're the inaugural guest in the Borderlands studio. What do you think about the place that we're in right now?
You know, it's beautiful. I used to work at a place very similar to this. I love the idea of sharing a space to work together. I love small businesses, so it's good. It's good. It's a nice space.
Right down on Monmouth Street in Newport. So let's just talk about like the main reason why you're running. You're in a pretty, you know, democratically controlled district. House Democrats are a little scared right now throughout the course of the entire Commonwealth. Why are you running?
You know, ultimately, I decided to run back when I was 12 years old. It's one of those things where it wouldn't have mattered if the Republicans were in an upswing right now or not. I just decided that it's more important to take care of the issues that are at hand right now for the state than to pursue my own personal goals right now. I'm young enough to be able to make this decision and say, you know what, I'm going to put my own ambitions aside to take care of the rest of the state first.
So you would be the youngest, if you were elected, the youngest member in the Kentucky House. Is that a novelty? I mean, you mentioned that. Do you consider yourself a serious candidate?
Oh, I mean, I would not have started to run if I didn't think that I was a serious candidate. I think it actually has a more of a value to you being a crossover vote. You know, if you're a Democrat, you're looking at somebody young and you're thinking, you know, this guy might have some ideologies that are similar with younger people. So I think it's a novelty, sure, but it's a novelty that helps me out.
So Dennis Keene is your opponent. I'm going to go over the last. Dennis has been, you know, elected into the House of Representatives since 2004 was his first election. I'm going to go over how much of a percentage vote in his district that he got. So in 2004, there was a three-way race, and he got 51%. 2006, he was unopposed. 2008, he got a whopping 69% versus an independent. 2010, he got 56%, and then in 2012, he got 59%. Pretty wide margins. Mm-hmm. You describe yourself as somebody that's looked at the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at those numbers, tell me, what is the path to victory?
Basically, these kind of elections are mostly personality tests, really. You know, if you go up to a house and you convince one person on a street, that person is going to help you out with the ground game. And this is all a ground war, really. You cannot win an election in a district like this without having a strong ground presence in every city. It's going to come down to having street captains, literally just street captains that are there to spread your word. And I'm not going to be one of those generic candidates who just sends out flyers and hopes people are going to vote. I'm going to write handwritten letters to people in every street of every district. So it's going to be good.
So let's talk about your personal plan. Education was a theme that you've talked about on your Facebook page, and you were recently, I guess, did you announce your candidacy on your Facebook page, or where did that?
Yeah, I announced my candidacy kind of on my private Facebook page first back in June. That was just when I officially filed to be considered, and we just filled it out the other day. So now on my official campaign page, yep, so we're good to go.
So education, talk about your plan there.
Well, mostly for education, a lot of people are talking right now about having charter schools. Charter schools are working very effectively in a lot of cities. A good one that I can think of right now is KIPP in Columbus, the Short North District. If you look into it, they've done a lot of great things. That area was one of the worst in the state, and now I believe they're performing on tests, you know, I want to say in the top 100 of the entire state now. So that's pretty good stuff. I'm all for charter schools and educational freedom. I would not be opposed to a voucher system. I think that's personally my optimal solution, to have a voucher program, because there are a lot of schools that are struggling right now, and the voucher program is a pretty solid solution.
Well, you know, and that's great. I mean, mm-hmm. and across the board in the state of Kentucky, that issue might play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk specifically in your district. How do you translate that message, which is generally a conservative message, into a generally Democratic district?
Well, let's take Newport for an example. Newport schools are suffering. Dayton schools have done a great job of picking things up. That's in my district. They have made vast improvements on their own. But sometimes a school district just is consistently poor. And, you know, you have to have a solution to put pressure on that school. Other than the state coming in, you have to put pressure on that school. And not every kid is going to get into a charter school. It's not going to happen. But with increased competition, you'll find that school district's going to step up. And they'll have less students to teach, and that gives those schools the chance to have more individualized learning for the kids that are left there.
So it sounds like you're saying, you know, the constituents in your district are just so, you know, ingrained into being Democrats that they're not necessarily listening to the message of what a charter school actually means. Is that what you're saying?
You know,
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but...
No. I think that a lot of people hear charter schools and they think, oh, you know, well, this is not going to be good for us because we've heard bad things. But most of the facts about charter schools are not bad. You know, aside from the teacher's problem, where teachers are concerned that they're not going to get paid enough, which is a very real, really real concern there, and something needs to be addressed about that. You know, when we move forward, should charter schools be allowed in Newport? That's something that needs to be addressed for the teachers moving forward.
So that's a good kind of bridge to the pension system.
Mm-hmm.
It's been priority number one with, you know, the Senate and the House this year, the General Assembly. how do you explain to teachers? Obviously, something's got to happen. I don't know what the answer is. What's your answer to that?
You know, honestly, at this point, there is not a very good answer to this problem. I mean, people from both sides of the aisle have tried to come up with good solutions. Obviously, on the big government side, people would say we should just borrow money from the federal government and pay for it, just take care of it right now. But people don't realize when you do that, you're assuming a burden, and then the federal government has more of an input on everything you do moving forward. Personally, I think that it's time to cut spending in other places and just take care of it as quickly as possible. That's the best way to do it. And it's going to hurt a little bit. It's going to hurt, but we've made this decision. It's been, growing for 20 years now? They've known about this for 20 years, and that's a shame because these teachers are the ones that are building the education of the future of the state. So it's something that needs to be addressed quickly, and we need to cut spending elsewhere.
You talk about job creation and tourism.
Mm-hmm.
Newport's kind of had a renaissance over, you know, the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
I guess where do you feel like we could be doing more in Newport?
Oh, there's always more you could be doing. I feel like we're not working effectively with the city of Cincinnati and Covington to come together to have like events that we can host together to get people to come in here. I mean, I've been thinking about a good example like Bunbury. Bunbury is a perfect example. If you really work with a festival or a group of people, because the city's partially funding that, you know?
Sure.
And if you work with Bunbury, you work with certain festivals, you get more people coming over to your side. You can have a stage on the Newport side, stage on the Covington side. You can work things out to make it effective to where we can work together to get more money for all of us in total. Make it a bigger festival. Make things happen. If we communicate better with the other river cities, we can build tourism.
So, and then looking through your Facebook page, and what is that, right, by the way? Matt Tieford?
Yep, it's Matt Tieford for State Representative.
So looking through that, it looks like, you know, two of your themes that you talk about quite often are transparency and corruption.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about transparency and looking at Dennis Keene's website, he's got, you know, 8 tabs at the top. So next to meet Dennis and, you know, contact us and, you know, contribute, he's got a tab that is specifically for transparency. Where do you fall? Where's if you're both kind of touting it, what does that mean?
So if you look at Mr. Keene's website, his idea of transparency is more of, I'm going to keep the public informed about how I'm voting, which is good. Every candidate should inform people about how they're voting. But pretty much the press is so good at that these days, that kind of transparency is not what I'm thinking of. The kind of transparency I'm talking about is letting people know where the money is going, how it's being spent, and if it's being spent effectively. You know, money is going places for projects, and it's not even being followed through with, you know. So let's say you get money for a road to be rebuilt. There's checks that he stood next to where roads were supposed to be rebuilt, where the money has not gone to that yet. You know, my version of transparency is where I say, this is how I voted on this. This is where the money is going, and I'm going to make sure that I keep people updated about when this is going to be finished and to make sure their tax money is being used effectively. That's transparency to me.
So you said it's easy to take pictures, and this is on your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Anybody can kind of take a look at this. So it's easy to take pictures next to checks when bringing our tax dollars back into the district, but I promise to follow projects through to the end. We must make sure that every cent of our money is held accountable. What are you talking about there specifically? What project was not followed through with?
You know, there are some things where the money was given to Bellevue, to Southgate, to build roads. And I mean, if you look at the roads, I mean, they're still not in very good conditions. You can look at Newport got a grant to rebuild their sidewalks. Actually, right here on Mama Street outside. And they were supposed to make them handicap accessible, you know? And if you look at them, sure, they are kind of handicap accessible, but not all of them are. And it's just on one road. If you're getting a bunch of money to fix something, you should fix it appropriately. You know, that's what the money is used for. This is not just free money. We're paying for it as taxpayers, you know? And taxpayers want to know. That's all there is to it.
So, transparency, corruption. That's a theme that you talk about overall. Are you talking specifically about, you know, this district or just in general?
You know, in general, there are some things in the district too, but mostly when it comes down to it, people are so willing to take any kind of money they can get for campaign funding, and then that becomes a private interest to them, you know? Why would you vote against something that's going to hurt the people that's giving you money? You have to keep that cash cow to come home. You know, so let's say that, you know, a nursing home is getting ready to move out of an area or something, you know? If you have private interest because you're getting money from that group, does it even matter if that's losing jobs from your district? Probably not, you know, because you got to keep that money coming in. And I think sometimes people would invest in those private interests before the best interests of their constituents.
So talk about that a little bit more specifically, the nursing home beds. Is that what you're referring to in this?
Yes, essentially, yes.
So Scott Wortman of the Enquirer wrote an article, and I guess give me your theme from the, your takeaway from his article, which basically had, this is what it dealt with. CareSpring and Baptist Covalescent are basically fighting over beds in this district.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you fall on that?
It's one of those things where you need to keep the money in your district. That should be your number one objective as a representative for your district. That's $150,000, you know, a year in revenue to the city. You know, that's $150,000 a year that could be spent on anything. Literally anything you could imagine that could help make this city better. And I would not let those beds go. I would not. I just wouldn't. So
and I guess, are you inferring that there's, you know, some, I guess, backroom dealings with some connections as far as donations and that kind of thing, which may be influencing that decision from our elected officials?
It's hard to necessarily pinpoint something on someone unless you have the paperwork right in front of you. But let's just say that there's always something a little fishy going on when something like that happens. It makes you say, why is this happening?
Sure. So you are, the headline for your article in the Inquirer dealt with, let me make sure that I'm getting that right. Young House candidate eyes governor's mansion. Were you happy with the takeaway, the headline of that?
Oh, you know, you got to love it. I mean, you got to catch people's interest when an article gets published. And what better way to say is, like, I'm a young guy. I'm going to be the governor in, you know, 10 to 14 years. You know, people are going to take more attention and notice to you, maybe in a good way, maybe in a bad way. But I'm very happy with that takeaway. I do plan on being the governor of the state one day. So it's a good place to start.
Have you had any conversation with Matt Bevin or Matt Bevin's people?
You know, I've met him a few times now, and I honestly think that he gets more flack than he deserves. You know, he's a really smart guy. I think that people tend to dislike someone because they have an R or a D next to his name, you know, his or her name. But I've talked to him, and I'm very positive that his plan for the long term for the state is an effective one.
So you also talk about quite a bit on your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Rand Paul a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What's your connection to Rand Paul?
I mean, you know, I'm one of those kids that kind of bought into the Ron Paul revolution back when I first started getting involved in politics once I turned 18. I've consistently been supporting Ron Paul and Rand Paul now. It's just he has a message that is very important to the Republican Party right now, and that's that we need to be more inclusive. And he's proven that. He's been going to African-American colleges. They're traditionally Democrat, liberal, and he is spreading the message of conservatism. And I believe we're the party of opportunity, and people just don't see that because the media blinds them a little bit. So
you've got an R next to your name. You mm-hmm. live in a pretty democratically controlled district. What are some issues that somebody like a young Republican that obviously like a Rand Paul would kind of cross lines on that a little bit? What are some issues that you may not necessarily line up with established Republicans?
You know, some people would look at established Republicans, especially like establishment Republicans, and these days they're not true conservatives, you know, and I am a true conservative. I think that if money is going to be spent, you know, we should not be spending it unwisely. And you'll find a lot of people in Senate right now that are just like, well, you know, we'd rather just throw money at it than find a way to cut things and use the math to get things done. I'm not the kind of person that's more of an established Republican. I'm kind of like a business-minded Republican. So
you mentioned also one of those items that I had in mind was marijuana. You had mm-hmm. a stance on that. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, marijuana is a very interesting topic for any state right now. I think that a lot of people are very misguided in their judgment towards marijuana. Many of my people that are involved with my campaign or from the party told me, you know, you should not talk about this issue because it's very divisive. But medical marijuana should not even be a conversation at this point. There are so many different countries right now. Israel is taking advantage of it right now exponentially, and they're curing their problems with marijuana. People are having seizures. It's affecting people's lifestyles. And when big pharma is, you know, pretty much putting people in their graves, we need to be looking for things that actually come from nature, that are good for us, that help you solve your problems with back pain, seizures. Medical marijuana should not even be a problem right now. That should be passed immediately.
You live in Highland Heights.
I do.
That's a small part of the district.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, one of the largest economic engines in Campbell County, especially, is NKU. We're not getting the funding that we need. And some, including President Jeff Merns, has called for an outcome-based funding system to get more money to NKU. How do you help NKU do that?
You know, at the end of the day, you have to hold NKU accountable for the amount of people they're bringing in, the amount of economic growth they're bringing to the region. And I think there's some kind of system we could work out that would help them out with that if they bring a certain amount of economic impact to the region. They need to be working on ways on their own time to find ways to bring more money into the region. And then we can in turn help them out by them helping us out. It's hard to allocate money when there are so many problems like the pension system that is being broken right now. There's just not enough money to throw everywhere. And people just think that the government just has an unlimited amount of money they can just give out to people. It doesn't work that way. We're going to be hurting in other places if we just throw money to that right now.
Where's some money that we can be cut, to your point?
Oh, boy, that's tough. You know, I know that Matt Bevin's already been working on the Connect project being cut. That's a good start. A lot of people are pretty upset about that, but I don't think they understand the exact impact of that. It's not going to cut people off the ACA. The Connect is something that's been run through the state. You know, it's money that we're going to have to start paying back really soon. That's something that needs to be cut immediately. And they can still have access to the ACA, but it's just not funded through state money. So
do you feel like that's just a messaging problem that if you're able, because in your district, that's not going to be a popular opinion. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a messaging issue that you can remedy on the ground?
Oh yeah, it's if people actually understand the way things are working, people just assume things because sometimes the media puts things out there and doesn't explain everything, and people are just like, "Wow, they're going to take away my health care." It's like, no, they're just going to transfer it over to someone else so the state doesn't have to deal with it. You know, and that makes sense to me. Why would the state want to keep dealing with something that's going to cost us money? Where else did that money go? You know,
you write about child poverty in your district as well. I'm going to read something from your Facebook page. One issue that my district needs to resolve immediately is that of childhood poverty and malnourishment. In Newport alone, nearly one-third of the children are at risk of homelessness. Accountability and fixing our state's broken adoption system are two of my top priorities. The future of our state is our children. Let's come together to fix this. What's not being done right now?
Let's look at the adoption system first. Okay, do you know that Governor Matt Bevin, our governor right now, applied to adopt a child and got turned down by the state? Just think about that for a second. The governor of our state got turned down for adoption. It is so difficult for people to adopt children right now. There are so many kids that need to be adopted. It's terrible. You know, we have to come together on both sides of the aisle and say, well, how are we going to invest in the state if not the future first? You know. And when kids are growing up malnourished, they don't have proper education. It's just bad because when they get malnourished, the brain does not develop properly. I studied a lot of developmental psychology, and it's a solution that needs to be taken care of. Like, why are we so concerned with infrastructure and building roads when our major export is crippling depression? You know what I'm saying? Like, why are you worried about a road when there are kids that are starving? You know, these are the kind of things that need to be getting our first attention instead of building roads. So.
And this might be tough for you to talk about. Heroin is one of those issues that we have to deal with as well. It was priority number one last year. Senate Bill 192 was a bipartisan, I guess, kind of compromise, and it came together. But at the end of the day, overdoses are up. Use of drugs like Narcan are up. I'm going to read this to you, and this might be tough for you. You wrote, 4 years ago this week, my family laid my brother to rest at the result of a heroin overdose. I share that same pain that I know many in our country are feeling right now, and I will not stop until we find an answer for those struggling with drug abuse. I won't stop until heroin dealers are punished to the fullest extent of the law. I won't stop until we get these people help instead of prison sentences. To all those in pain for the loss of a family member of struggling with a family member currently battling addiction, I'm with you. I will always be with you. We will find a solution together. So obviously it hits home with you. What happened? What do you think we can do better?
You know, it's one of those things where it's embarrassing that we're still throwing people in prison that are depressed. People turn to heroin and drugs because they're depressed. These people are actually mentally ill. They need the help. And I don't know if you're familiar with why people get addicted, but a lot of it's dopamine related. It's a reward system kind of thing. I studied a lot of psychology, and these people like breaking the law. It's one of those things that it provides even more of a rush to them. And why are we throwing people in prison, breaking families up even more, and wasting taxpayer dollars? I mean, it's a very large-scale thing. There's no winning by throwing people in prison. We need to make sure that we keep people out of prison, get them to buy back into the community through mandatory community service, I believe, but also first getting them treatment. Treatment should always be the first option. We could cut a bunch of money from taxes to spend on on treatment centers instead of throwing them in jail over and over again. You waste a bunch of money.
So last year, part of the compromise included an immediate $5 million allocated from the budget to go to treatment centers. The problem being that in Northern Kentucky, that amount of $5 million, our cut, went to in-treatment programs, but you had to be in jail. And that happened in Kenton County. Do you see any programs that are working here?
Quite frankly, no. I don't think there are many programs that are working effectively. In fact, I know from firsthand accounts that people are still able to get their hands on opioids and heroin while in these treatment centers. It's happening. It's very prevalent. It's not working. You know, we need to find a new way to solve this problem. Do I think there is a solution right now? No. But we need to work together to make sure that we do find a solution.
So you talk about you won't stop until dealers are punished to the full extent of the law. That was a compromise that Senate and House Republicans last year had to pull back the reins on to be able to get a heroin bill, which unfortunately they waited until the last second again to get it done. And what the result was 192. We're a year out from that. Do you think that was a mistake not to include harsher punishment for dealers?
Oh, 100% a mistake. If these people are not afraid to deal drugs, and they should be afraid, you know, these people are thinking, well, I can just get off of this pretty easily. It's not. It's not that. It doesn't work that way. They can still operate within prison and make money from within prison selling heroin and selling drugs within prison. It's true. So we should have expedited that. We should have made that happen immediately. Honestly, if we're being honest, I think that heroin dealers that are dealing heroin and someone gets killed as a result of it, or it gets traced back to them, just second-degree murder, right there. No less. I'm very sick of people getting off easily. It's not good.
So obviously, like, when your brother died from a heroin overdose, like, you have a connection that probably everybody... They did a study in the Inquirer, and it said in Northern Kentucky, one out of three people know somebody that has an addiction to heroin. Probably nobody better or more close to you. I guess talk about that, not as a politician, but as somebody that had a brother that dealt with this addiction. What did it do to you to change your mindset?
You know, it's one thing for people to be sitting up on Capitol Hill and saying, we need to solve this problem. It's another thing when you walk into a room and you see the needle in your dead brother's arm. You know, it's something that people aren't familiar with, able to relate to. They don't see the face of your mother and see the ghost that she becomes she's still not the same. She'll probably never be the same. I can't even imagine a mother losing her son, you know? And it's hard for me to be able to deal with because my mom is still in that state. And I have to be there for her all the time. I have to be there, you know, to take care of her and get her motivated just to leave the house. People don't see the firsthand accounts. My mom was a very happy person before this, you know? And people don't relate to that. Until you're there firsthand and see what's going on, you don't know. You just don't know.
The emotional... just wreckage that it's causing, the financial wreckage that it's causing our state. It's, we have a bill in place, but, you know, do you see it getting better?
Honestly, in the short term, what they're proposing is not going to solve the problem immediately. Like I said, prison, people like prison because it keeps people alive, but the success rate of people getting off of drugs is reduced when people go to prison. It's already bad enough for heroin. I think it's only like maybe 1 out of 10 people get off heroin once they become addicted. And that number drops even more when people go to prison and then go back out into general society. They turn right into it. I actually have another family member that's in jail right now for heroin. And he came out and overdosed the same night he got out. Same night. What's the basis here? You know, why are we making people even more miserable? If we know that depression leads to heroin use, why are we making them even more depressed by throwing them into prison?
So you mentioned a good ground game that you're going to have. That means, obviously, that to me, that means door-to-door, face-to-face connections. Mm-hmm. You don't have the financial backing that your opponent probably does or the war chest that he does. Give me, you know, you knock on the door. I'm one of your constituents. What do you say?
You know, you sit there and you actually have a list. I'm going to have, like I said, a handwritten letter to give to everybody. I'm going to knock on the door, and even if I'm not there, I'm going to leave it for them. You sit there and you tell them, I am a person who is young. I'm a person who's still passionate about all this. Someone that's been in office for a long time tends to fizzle out, maybe for private reasons or whatever. I'm young, and I want to solve all these problems right now. Right now. There's no better time than right now to solve all this. And being young, I have the potential to do so. Here's what I stand for. Here's what my promise is. And I'm going to make sure that you know that your money is being spent properly.
Well, Matt Tieford, thank you very much. Where can the people find your information?
Yeah, just go to Matt Tieford for State Representative on Facebook. It's the best way to find me.
And again, Matt is a Republican candidate for the 67th District, which encompasses Wilder, Dayton, Newport, Bellevue, Southgate, Woodlawn, and part of Highland Heights. He's going to be, right now, you're the only primary candidate. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't really foresee anybody else running against me. Someone could still come out of the blue. It happens every now and then. But the filing date's only about 3 days away. So
yeah, and if it holds same right now, it'll be Matt Tieford R versus Dennis Key D. And that will take place in November of this year. So Matt Tieford in the Borderlands Omega Processing Podcast Studio. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You can always access our podcast archives at fourthomasmatters.podbean.com, or you can just go to iTunes or Google Play, type in For Thomas Matters under podcasts or iTunes, and they'll pull up that way as well. So again, Omega Processing Solutions is our podcast sponsor for FTM Radio. Are you an independent business owner looking for a better way to process credit cards? Omega Processing Solutions' straightforward application and approval process makes it really, really simple. It's 2 pages long. I can do it. That means you can do it. They'll act upon it really quickly, usually within the same day. They never outsource their critical functions, which means that they can start your application process and get you up and running in the same day, which is a pretty big deal in this industry. So to schedule an appointment with one of their professional account executives, you can call them at 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724, or send an email to omegap.com. Once again, Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio.